congregants around the Commonwealth can now return to their houses of worship as Massachusetts begins phase one of its reopening. So we wanted to check in with local religious leaders to see how they're interpreting the new guidelines and what those guidelines mean, both for being in community, in a faith community, and for sacred practices. We have several voices to talk to, and we begin with Rabbi Joel Sissonwine, Senior Rabbi of Temple Beth Elohim in Wellesley. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Rabbi Joel.
Thank you. It's always good to think with you.
So, you know, I think there were a lot of people who were surprised that houses of worship were included in the phase one reopening. Mm-hmm. Were you surprised, and are you happy, or are you concerned?
That's a great question. Look, just because the governor has enabled us to gather doesn't mean we should, or we will. We'll have our own community studying these issues. But I think that if anyone's going to lead, perhaps it should be a community that strives for the highest of ethical living. And so we'll explore, you know, these important questions of how to preserve life and be responsible at this critical moment in our nation's history.
Any rituals or parts of the service that are going to be hard to do in this new normal, Rabbi Joel, and how do you overcome those challenges?
Another great question, something we've been struggling with these past 10 weeks, and we've learned that, you know, we are essential, but our building is not, that there are other ways to gather. I can say that the story of Judaism is the story of a people on a journey, and the key to a successful journey to the promised land, according to our tradition, is to make sure that everyone is okay, that we walk together, even the most vulnerable, the elderly, the frail, those with compromised immune systems. And so that's what we need to do. We need to walk together in this moment as a community and make sure no one's left behind.
You know, our WBUR colleague Miriam Wasser has reported on how COVID-19 has changed the ability to mourn in Jewish communities and noted to us the importance of a Jewish principle called, I'm not going to get this right, but I'm going to try, Pikuach Nefesh, which is a concept that the preservation of human life overrides any religious rule. Is that something that's coming into your mental framework as you're thinking about this moment?
Certainly. So the notion of Pikuach Nefesh is to preserve human life, that sometimes one needs to sacrifice a sacred obligation simply to be able to preserve life. So sometimes there are things that we want to do, we would like to do, but we really can't at this moment because we need to preserve human life, all human life.
And before we let you go, any message that you have to those who are deciding whether or not to return to services in their faith communities this weekend?
Yes, I think that even those who choose to return, and I hope that those institutions that do open are very, very careful about people's health. But even those who choose to return, it's not going to be the same. We can't hug. We can't touch. We need to maintain our social distance. So even a return to congregational life has to acknowledge that there's great loss and pain. And I just hope that our communities do it very carefully and are inclusive. Don't forget those who are vulnerable and make sure that they're a big part of our religious journey together.
That's Rabbi Joel Sissonwine, Senior Rabbi of Temple Beth Elohim in Wellesley. Thanks for coming back today. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
So let's turn now to Reverend Laura Everett, who's the Executive Director of the Massachusetts Council of Churches. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Reverend Laura.
Hi, Tiziana.
So the Mass Council of Churches met with Governor Baker's Reopening Advisory Board. Given that, what are your reactions to the plans as they've been released? And do the plans address any concerns that you may have presented when you met with them?
Well, the plans raise a lot of questions. I know pastors in my network are feeling overwhelmed in a lot of situations. Some are pleased that they have the option to gather. And every pastor I know wants their church to be a place of healing, not a source of sickness. And there are some very real practical concerns that we just don't have answers to at this point. Do we have the cleaning supplies? Do we have masks? How do we do this?
Well, let's stay on that one for a second, because you know, you are a representative or part of a very large community of churches. Yeah. What is the likelihood that these faith institutions are going to be able to get a hold of the physical protective equipment, sanitizing equipment, et cetera? I mean, there's a spiritual dimension to this, but there's also a very important practical dimension.
That's right. And I think pastors are working with their denominational leadership, and we're going to see a really wide range in the weeks and months ahead. We already are seeing that. We're seeing some churches that say, we are preparing to meet on Sunday. And we are seeing, for example, the Episcopal Diocese of Massachusetts are saying, not until July 1st. We have other churches in the United Church of Christ that are saying not until the end of the summer, and still others are saying not until May 2021 or until a vaccine is found. There is a really, really wide range that we're seeing.
What is lost when a congregation can't physically be together to worship?
Oh, so much has been lost. I've been amazed and impressed by the creativity of all of our pastors in this time who have found wonderful ways to connect. But the truth is, we believe in a God who became embodied in Jesus Christ. And so being present in body matters to Christians, in the rituals of baptism and Eucharist, to holding hands and singing. And things like singing are potentially very problematic. And so we're seeing congregations have to adapt.
You know, one of the other questions that's been on my mind is the question of First Amendment freedoms, church and state, balancing public health with those freedoms. You know, especially given what we saw with the Worcester pastor, Reverend Christopher Casey, who continued holding in-person services amid the state's stay-at-home advisory. How are you thinking about that balance?
I think it's a very delicate balance, and certainly one that is in the mind of every elected official. That to continue to hold service when our elected and public health officials are saying we are required to stay at home, that's not a risk I would have taken. And Christians make this really countercultural claim that we are all part of one church. And I know that there are people in the church that do things I find infuriating, and I'm sure that I do things that other Christians find objectionable. But my job is to call us back to those core Christian values we see in Jesus, who's always healing and always looking for those who have been hurt.
I want to ask you, what is your message to people who are trying to decide for themselves whether or not now is the time to return to the buildings, to their houses of worship, regardless of their faith tradition?
Well, since the rabbi included some Hebrew, I want to turn to the Greek and to remind folks that the word economy comes from the Greek oikonomia, which means the whole household of God. And as we're thinking about taking care of the whole economy, the whole household of God, we want to make sure that we are prioritizing the communities that have been most harmed, Black, immigrant, unhoused communities, and that we expect that of the churches, and we expect that of our elected leadership too.
That's Reverend Laura Everett, Executive Director of the Massachusetts Council of Churches. Thanks for being with us today. I really appreciate it. It was good to talk to you again.
Thank you, Tiziana.
So let's turn now to Father John Ooney, pastor at St. Cecilia Parish in the Back Bay. Welcome to Radio Boston, Father John.
Hey, Tiziana. Nice to be with you.
It's good to talk to you. What does reopening mean for your parish, Father John?
Well, we've been, zooming away, trying to see what the governor was going to say today and trying to balance that with what the archdiocese was thinking and all of that in the mix of what's the common sensical thing to do here. You know, we draw in some numbers. So even with a 40% occupancy, that's still puts probably like 240 to 50 people in, and, you know, it's logistical questions. How do we do that? Like the Reverend Laura was saying, is there enough sanitizer? How do we do that? How do we space people out? Who gets in? Who does it? Like, it just doesn't feel natural. And
how do you do that? What are you going to do?
We're not sure yet. We're talking about it. One thing we feel is no pressure to rush. Like just because we get the quote-unquote go-ahead, that doesn't mean we're going to do it. I think the governor's and his team have been very thoughtful. You know, it's like a two-edged sword because we start too early and it's a disaster. Start too late, you know, churches go down, like businesses go down and restaurants go down. You know, like when is the right time? What's just the right mix? So we really have just begun talking about that. Well, we've been talking about it, but now that we've got kind of this phase one opening, we're not sure exactly when, but I could tell you it won't be this Sunday.
So it's not going to be right away for you?
No.
Are your parishioners a part of this conversation? Are they helping you sort through this?
Great question. Well, up to this point, it's been our staff discussion, the team, because you know things are kind of fresh from yesterday. But even prior, as we've been thinking about it, you know, you get input here and there. But you know, our parish council is going to be meeting tomorrow evening, and then you know, parishioners, and we do things. We're not overly autocratic around here, you know, so the message gets out and the input comes in and I think we'll all be involved, but it can't be, you know, it's not going to be a kind of the whole parish committee decides this, you know, we're just going to try to do the right thing again in smart, responsible ways in sync with like the governor's timeline, the mayor's, the diocese, and just what seems to be right for us here. So I know that sounds,
you know,
vague.
We recognize. No, I mean, it sounds real. It sounds like you're still sorting it out.
Yeah.
We recognize that there's both a community need here and then there are sacred practices. I know you know I'm Catholic and I keep thinking about communion. I mean, if that's a sacrament. It's not Mass unless there's communion. So for your church, for your faith tradition, how do you think about that? And how should any faith tradition that has sacred practices that run up against these public health concerns begin to navigate that?
Thoughtfully, I'd even say prayerfully, like for all of our faith backgrounds, just we're all kind of dealing, you know, not to oversimplify, but the Jews, the Muslims, and the Christians, we all believe in the same God. You know, we have the different names, but we all believe in the same God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the God of Abraham, I mean. And, you know, this God is a God that wants to be in the thick and thin of our lives. And as we, as we go forward in our different traditions, things are different. But as the rabbi said, you know, the human good outweighs any religious rule. And that's a very broad paraphrase of what he said so eloquently, you know. So we have to think of these things. So, for instance, we're going online with our masses, and we've had really significant bump in viewership, and I don't know what that says about Catholic culture. You know, like it's easy to have the bacon and eggs frying in the background, and you know, some blueberry muffins, and have a cup of coffee, and then just watch, and then you know, you can kind of tune in, tune out. That's a different experience than you know, actually coming here and being part of it, and receiving communion and communing with the good God, with each other. Those are two different experiences. You know, there's a tactile nature to this, so it's. It's different. I think the Pope said, like, we're in a tunnel, you know. So this isn't like the new way, the Jetsons. You know what I mean? This is how the new worship's going to be. The desire is to come back and to bring everybody back into the fold, but we have to do it in really sensible ways. I'll tell you just a personal anecdote, if I can. My mom just died, you know, and it's like we don't
I'm
have
sorry.
the normal. Comforting rituals, you know, of the wake and the gathering and the hugging and the kissing and the telling stories and the laughing and the crying. We don't have the time together. We don't have the liturgy, that Mass. And then, you know, so we're at the cemetery with a small group of, you know, 10 people. And so all of these things missing don't provide the same experience via the internet than they would if they were in person. So, and that goes to all the different religious traditions, right? We're mourning in different ways. We're celebrating in different ways. These are strange times, you know, but we can't lose touch with the source of what gives us hope and helps us to carry on and propels us to keep loving each other. I don't mean to give a homily.
Well, thank you
there,
for sharing. No, that's all right. Pastors do that. I appreciate you sharing that, and I'm sorry for your loss, and I do appreciate you joining us today. That's Father John Uni, pastor at St. Cecilia Parish in the Back Bay. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiziana.
So let's turn now to Sheikh Yasser Fahmy, instructor on Muslim studies at Harvard Divinity School. Welcome back to Radio Boston. It's good to talk to you.
Good to be back with you.
So what does this reopening permission, for lack of a better word, mean for you and those you serve?
Well, I think, first I want to give my condolences to Father Uni. You know, I would love to have been there with him in his time of need. And I think Father Uni also, he captured the complexity. You know, we are in unprecedented times, and everyone's trying to kind of make sense of what's going on. And he mentioned that in many ways, you know, the governor's, you know, maintaining a very delicate balance of trying to, you know, open up the door for people, the doors for people to negotiate their spiritual realities and congregational realities at the same time, the deep concern for public health and welfare. So it definitely is not easy. And you know, I think everyone is thoughtful and cautious. And, you know, the Muslim community is a community that really does put as a primary concern the health and the wellness of the collective, the community and the collective. And, you know, one of the beautiful things that I've seen in this time period, as we've kind of like altered our styles of congregating and coming together and praying and worshiping, is when we've, you know, we've kind of changed our sacred practices in some ways. You know, obviously our hearts are attached to the mosque and we want to go back to Friday prayers. It's just so unprecedented that we haven't been able to go to Friday prayers. We're in the sacred month of Ramadan. You know, we are so attached to the mosque in Ramadan. Every night we're going to the mosque for prayer.
Yes. What does it mean for the end of Ramadan?
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, Eid is a huge thing. I mean, Eid is our big, big celebration of the year, you know, and it's in a few days, and just to not have people around and to not be celebrating, everyone getting dressed up, food, gifts, toys, laughs, laughter, everything. I mean, that's a huge part of it. And that will be missed. I mean, I mean, as Father Uni and others have said, I don't see that we're going to be rushing into anything just because we're seriously cautious about this and thoughtful. The Muslim Task Force is a Muslim task force. It's a national entity that's been put together on COVID that I shared with the producers. They put out a statement on what a phased opening perhaps may look like. Very, very, very thoughtful, very conservative in its nature. But the one thing I did want to share, which I think is integral to appreciate, is, you know, we're all here and we're all trying to figure out our spirituality, our connection to God, our connection to community. And one of the really beautiful transitions that I've really been so happy seeing is how in the Muslim community, you know, in the absence of going to the mosque and being amongst, we've really brought the mosque out into the world around us, into the streets. And so you see the tremendous humanitarian efforts and relief efforts and efforts to bring food and all sorts of, you know, protective care packages. You see the work of like an organization like ICNA Relief locally in Boston, which is doing tremendous work to resolve these matters. And so you see the communities coming together. So much food is being passed around. And you see a sense of togetherness and a coming together in this time of need that in many ways perhaps wasn't at the same level before. And that's a really beautiful thing. And so, you know, I encourage my, you know, everyone from all faith traditions to imagine what it looks like to bring your congregation out into the public sphere, into your community, you know, through Zoom and through streams. But also, you know, what does it mean to really be there for others in this time and to give? And I'm really inspired by the examples that I've seen. You know,
that's Sheikh Yasser. Oh, I'm sorry, Sheikh. I have to end you there. We've only got 30 seconds left. Sheikh Yasser Fahmy, instructor on Muslim studies at Harvard Divinity School. Thanks for being with us.
No, my pleasure. No problem. Thank you so much.